As many of you know, in Jamaica, there's a saying, and the saying is, no problem, man. That's right. That's exactly right. Well, there's a story of a man who did seem to have a problem. This man was walking on a mountain trail, not paying a lot of attention where he was going, and all of a sudden he slipped and fell off the side of the cliff. Luckily, he grabbed a twig or a branch that was growing out of the mountain, but he was hanging on for dear life, knowing that he couldn't hold on for long. And so he shouted, "Is anybody up there?" And all of a sudden, there was this voice coming from on high that said, "Yes." And he said, "Oh, good, thank God, thank God. Who is it?" And the voice said, "This is God." Well, he thought, "This is great. This is perfect. This is wonderful." And so he said, "God, please help me." And God said, "I will help you, but I only have one question. And the question is, do you trust me?" And the man said, "Oh, yes, God, I trust you with all my heart and soul. I trust you." And God said, "Well, that's really good, because my direction to you is let go." And the man said, "What? What did you say?" And God said, "I said let go." Well, there was this long pause, and then the man said, "Is anybody else up there?" So, and don't we all sometimes feel like that man in the story? Don't we all? Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. Amen, right? That we are at the end of our rope. At the end of our rope. It is. I'm sorry to all you dog people. If I could have found a dog hanging at the end of its rope, I would have used that, but I could only find a kitten. Okay, it's not always easy, really, to hold on to that no problem mind consciousness when the aggravations of this life can seem insurmountable. I mean, even though we know and we realize that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, sometimes the human demands just seem too great. I had a day like that recently. It was a Monday, the traditional day off in the ministry, and I woke up that morning feeling good and grateful for my day because I had a to-do list 2.5 pages long. Honestly, and there was nothing tiny on this to-do list, none of those items that you just go, oh, check, you know. I had a lesson to prepare. I had a class to work on. I had a chaplain meeting to organize. I had just had all of these things to do. I had birthday presents to buy. It was just one of those days, but I was ready. I'd had a good night's sleep. I meditated. I walked 3 miles. I was ready to face the day. And then I went down to feed my fish in my koi pond, and there was a problem on. My pond was as black as could be. It was absolutely brackish. The fish were lethargic, barely moving around. The filter system had failed, and the fish would not eat. Now, when koi refuse to eat, often it's too late to save them. So Bob and I spent the entire, most of the day, till about 3 p.m, working on the problem, cleaning out the bog filter, doing a massive water change, calling in some help. Luckily, we were able to save the fish, and I was grateful for that. However, I am here to admit, it was really hard for me to stay spiritually centered through that process. I kept one eye on the outdoor clock, which I was about ready to take down, just worrying about all the time I was losing. My to-do list was still waiting for me upstairs. And I know we've all had days like that. We've all had times when it's so hard to stay focused on our spiritual identity in the face of those pressing demands. And actually, the problems of this life, the major challenges and conflicts, can be much more serious, as we all know, than caring for koi. We can encounter issues that don't seem to have immediate solutions, personal health challenges, lingering illnesses of loved ones, financial problems, or even the loss of a partner through death or divorce. And sometimes, like the man hanging on to that branch, when we face these kinds of challenges, we feel that we can no longer hang on, and yet we are afraid to let go. Ellen Devenport addresses this in her newest book. I love this title, Hell in the Hallway, Light in the Door. She writes, "When one door closes, another one opens, but it can be hell in the hallway." In Unity, we know that hell is a state of consciousness. Going through, she says, really groping through the darkness, you might trip and fall, or you might give up and cry, or you might cuss. You can't even begin to see the doorway out. Yet this time of transition, this time of challenge, can become the launching pad for the rest of your life. In other words, often our challenges can lead us to a new beginning. Now, a perfect biblical example of this is found, I think, in the story of Joseph, one of the great dramas of the Bible. I really encourage you to read it this week. It's a long story. It is found in Genesis 37, verses 1 through 36, and then continues again in chapters 39 through 50. It goes all the way to the end of Exodus. But it's one of the great dramas of the Bible. And today, we're going to look at the Cliff Notes version, okay? I'm just going to give you a summary. And as we do this, just think about what we can learn from Joseph about navigating life's problems. So Joseph is the 11th son of the patriarch Jacob, and he is favored by his father, which absolutely makes him resented by all of his other brothers. Joseph actually is a tattletale, running to Jacob with reports constantly of his brother's bad behavior. I can identify with that. I had a little brother like that. So, and when Jacob presents Joseph with that coveted coat of many colors, the brother's resentment turns to hate, fueled to even higher levels when Joseph begins relating his dreams to them, prophetic visions showing Joseph one day ruling over all of his brothers. And finally, the brothers have had enough, and they conspire to kill Joseph. Well, Reuben, the oldest brother, objects to outright murder, so they decide to sell Joseph to a caravan slave, really, of Ishmaelites headed for Egypt. And they report to Jacob, the father, that his beloved son has been slain by wild beasts. Now, this not only takes sibling rivalry to new heights, doesn't it? But I think we would all agree that this sounds like Joseph has a problem, right? He does, okay? But as the story continues, Joseph is sold to a high-ranking Egyptian officer named Potiphar, who eventually notices how Joseph excels in all of his duties, and that whatever Joseph does, God looks favorably upon him. So Potiphar makes Joseph the head of his household. Now Joseph is young and handsome, drawing the attention of Potiphar's wife, who tries to seduce him. Who says the Bible is not X-rated? In parts it is. Now when Joseph rebuffs her attentions, she accuses him of rape. And Joseph, although innocent, is cast into prison. Again, we would call this a problem. However, the text says, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love. He gave Joseph favor in the sight of the chief priest, jailer, and the chief jailer puts Joseph in charge of the care of all the other prisoners." So Joseph is still really rising up in the world, and there he is in prison. And in this role, Joseph interprets the dreams of his fellow prisoners, and his interpretations all come true. One of the prisoners is later released and becomes a cupbearer for the Pharaoh. And a couple of years later, Joseph's in jail all this time, but a couple of years later, the Pharaoh has some troubling dreams, and the cupbearer remembers Joseph and recommends him as an interpreter. Joseph, as most of you know, predicts 7 years of bountiful harvest, followed by 7 years of famine, and recommends that the Pharaoh begin storing grain immediately. For this insight and wisdom, Joseph is made a ruler in Egypt, second only to the king. So when the famine finally strikes, it reaches all the way to Canaan, and Jacob sends his 10 sons, brothers to Joseph, to Egypt. They come before Joseph, but do not recognize him. They bow before him, just as Joseph has dreamed. And eventually, not right away, it takes several chapters, but eventually Joseph reveals his identity and forgives his brothers. His family is reunited and live peacefully in Egypt for about 400 years until the time of Moses. And so when we look at this story, a few things are clear, I think, about Joseph and for us. First, God was with Joseph through it all, even when it didn't look like it. God was there guiding and protecting him. And Joseph grew along the way. In the beginning, he was taunting his brothers and tattling on them, but eventually he used his dream interpretations for the greater good of all and ended up saving countless people. Also, every step of Joseph's saga, even those situations that looked like problems, actually carried him forward to the light and purpose of God. Just think about it. If Joseph had not been cast into slavery, he would not have met Potiphar. If he hadn't met Potiphar, he wouldn't have been accused by Potiphar's wife and thrown into prison. If he hadn't been in prison, he wouldn't have met the cupholder and then eventually the Pharaoh. Near the end, Joseph tells his brothers, "Even though you intended to do too harm for me, God intended it for good." And that's an important lesson for us all. Even though we don't always see the big picture, many times our problems can actually be stepping stones toward our ever-unfolding good. God is with and within us always. God's will for us is ever-unfolding good, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. What we call problems often can be spiritual opportunities in disguise. I had a principal once who ended every staff meeting with, "Just remember, when you go to meet the kids today, there are no challenges, there are only opportunities." And that's true. It's just a matter of a point of view. Several years, Bob and I were vacationing in Bar Harbor, Maine, and we visited a lobster hatchery. Now catch on, this is related, I swear, okay? Where they breed lobsters to return back to the ocean. And the tour guide explained that in order for a baby lobster, called a cricket, by the way, to grow, it must shed its original shell. So before the cricket releases its shell, there's a picture of a cricket that's just done that, it grows a thin one underneath, almost like a membrane, but it's not nearly as strong as the shell that it just shed. And as you might expect, this is the time when crickets are most vulnerable. Crickets are most vulnerable to predators. In fact, they try to hide for the first few months, if they can, in the ocean. Now, lobsters go through this process not just once, but several times in their lives in order to continue growing. And I have on my desk at home a little stuffed animal lobster. I call him Lawrence. He's bright red. He sits on my desk, and I keep him there all the time to remind me that those times when I feel the most vulnerable can be times of my greatest growth. I meant to bring Lawrence, but I left him at home today. I'll have to bring him another day to show you. But the Unity minister, Martha Smock, in her book, Meet It With Faith, writes, Every experience can become our teacher. Every one of us has had challenges that at first seem impossible, but later on proved to be a moment of growth and gain. And through these experiences, we discover new strengths in ourselves. We unfold innate powers and capabilities. We experience just a greater unity with God, and we learn to rely on God with a faith greater than we knew we had. In fact, Myrtle Fillmore has a chapter in her book, How to Let God Help You, called Life is a School. And this slide reminds us, in other words, life is a school where you learn to remember what your soul already knows. I love that. At every moment of our lives, through minor aggravations or major life challenges, we, like Joseph, always have the light of God, the source of our being, going before us and preparing our way. Our job is simply to become open and receptive to that divine inspiration, to unfurl our sail and let the wind carry our boat. Now, we didn't create the wind, but the wind is there to help us. We don't need to beg the wind to blow. We don't need to struggle against the current. We simply flow with it. Jesus told us to seek first the kingdom, and we know the kingdom of God is where? Within. The kingdom of God is within. And with that inner Christ, we have all the discernment, the strength, and the power to do what is ours to do and leave the rest to the divine. Unity minister and writer Jim Rosmerge suggests that we often go through a three-stage process in trying to solve life's problems. See if any of these stages sound familiar to you. They certainly do to me. In the first stage, we're totally problem-centered. Here we dwell on the difficulty and we give more energy to the problem than to the solution. We're mired in negative consciousness and we tell ourselves, I can't face this, there's no way out, this will never work out. Anybody ever been there in our lives? Yes, I see some head shaking. At this stage, we fail to recognize that we have God with us and all these inner resources, and we remain trapped in despair and hopelessness. Sometimes the second stage is where finally we become solution-oriented. Here we move from despair to hope, and that's a good thing. However, we might just scurry around looking all over the place for a solution. We do some research. We look on the internet. We join a support group. We ask all of our friends' advice. We might even try some viable solutions. But the challenge seems to retreat for a while, only to resurface later in our lives. Sometimes negative cycles can plague us for years. Finally, we realize that the peace and joy of entering the next stage is to become God-oriented. At this point, we do what we might have done first. This is where we let go of the branch. This is where we let go and let God. In faith and trust, we do something that we might not exactly like to do. See what your reaction is to this word. We surrender. We surrender to God's ever-unfolding good. Now, I think we object to that word surrender because we think of it as a defeat. This type of surrender doesn't mean to wave the white flag and give up. Instead, it means that we stop thinking that we have to navigate our life issues alone. We have to stop living life as if it were a do-it-yourself project. How many of us have gotten involved in do-it-yourself projects and then had to call a plumber or a repairman or some other body? I see some hands admitting to that. What we need to do in this stage, and what we do in this stage, is we turn the pivotal nature of our souls. Our souls are pivotal. We can always look to the outer world, or we can look to the divine. And at this stage, we just turn our pivotal souls from the crisis to the Creator. During our Discover the Power class recently, someone suggested this, that we stop telling God how big our problem is, and we start telling our problem how big our God is. And I love that. I love that saying. Through prayer and meditation, we transcend the problem and become aligned with Spirit. We hold spiritual space, knowing that we are not alone, that Spirit is greater than any earthly challenge. Jesus looked at his disciples one day, and he said to them, "With God, with man, things may be impossible, but with God, all things are possible." Now, this does not mean that God is like a master puppeteer in the sky pulling the strings. This does not mean that God is like a tyrant causing our problems, nor is he like a magic problem solver taking them away. God is divine energy, guiding us to the truth of who and what we really are. And no matter how many challenges we face, if we remember that God's will for us is ever unfolding good, we will be able to trust God and turn every trial into a blessing. One of my favorite New Thought writers, Michael Beckwith, says, "Our problems can't be solved until we are resolved to evolve." I think I better say that again. Our problems can't be solved until we are resolved to be evolved. We need to look for the blessing in every lesson and for the lesson in every blessing. We need to ask ourselves, how can I use this experience to grow? How can I use this experience to love? How can I use this experience to serve others? So maybe in the end, the Jamaicans were right. Maybe there are no problems, Mon. Maybe there are just opportunities for spiritual understanding and growth. Martha Smock expresses this beautifully in her poem, No Other Way. And it goes like this. Could we but see the pattern of our days, we should discern how devious were the ways by which we came to this, the present time, this place in life. And we should see the climb our soul has made through the years. We should forget the hurts, the wanderings, the fears, the wastelands of our life, and know that we could only come no other way or grow into our good without these steps. Our feet found it hard to take. Our faith found it hard to meet. The road of life winds on, and we are like travelers, and we go from turn to turn until we know the truth that life is endless, and we are forever inhabitants of all eternity. And so with every challenge we face, every turn in the road we make, every detour we take, it's an opportunity for us to discover the powers of God within. And when we align our attitudes and reactions with the indwelling Christ, we navigate our challenges through love, wisdom, and faith, and we continue growing every single day of our lives. And through every earthly challenge, we emerge stronger, wiser, and more resilient, more attuned with the divine. We are truly standing on holy ground as we trust in the goodness of God. So let's just take a moment now as we prepare for prayer and meditation to affirm the great truth about God. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.